following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn-Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The MLB has announced a proposal that would change college baseball forever. It's Friday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Welcome in, welcome in. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you are doing well. The sun is finally kind of trying to shine through the clouds here this afternoon on this June 19th. Year of our Lord 2026. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And the definition of a free-for-all Friday here this afternoon. We've been sitting in the studio for about an hour now, and we've figured out our rundown, we figure out the topics that we want to talk about here this afternoon. We know we are diving into a brand new MLB proposal. I guess I said they announced, actually, this new proposal, again, changing college baseball forever, changing the MLB rules forever, but how that indirectly would affect college baseball. Really excited to dive into that here this afternoon. But other than that, it's wide open for anybody that would like to be a part of today's show. We have our topics, but again, we have spent probably the last hour or so diving into kind of what's taken social media by storm and kind of the male brain by storm whenever there is any sort of free time, whether that's 82-0, whether that's 162-0, whether that's 17-0, 15-0, building the perfect resume, building the perfect roster for whatever sports. And we have spent quite some time here diving into that today. And Tripp still has not gotten 82-0. He's gotten 81-1 a couple
literally
of times. And so Friday to you, sir. I knew it only took a couple of times. I got the 82-0. And so apologies that your ball knowledge is just not where it needs to be. But Friday to you,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, you know, when you get the point guard of the 2020s and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who many people believe is could be one become an all-time great, you have James Harden, who during this stretch was, quote, he's averaging 50. LeBron James, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Kobe Bryant. You know, you'd think that they'd, you know, they wouldn't lose a game.
See, there's just not the chemistry. You're spending too much time at the free throw line, man.
Hey, you know what? That's fine. And, you know, it's maybe too many Lakers on the team. I mean, I thought that would have something to do with chemistry, but it's whatever. But it is a good Friday outside of that. Again, the sun is shining in the Auburn Opelika area. And I'm excited for a great show today. And if you want to be a part of the show, call in 334-321-1390. Phone lines should be open all day today. And if you want to text in as well, that's totally cool. And we highly encourage it. 334-784-1685. 334-784-1OTL. And Christian, baseball might never look the same after this new proposal by the MLB.
No, it hasn't. But if you've done your 82-0, your perfect NBA roster, or 162-0, send that in to the text box.
Please.
If you have the time. I would love to see some other ones, because I've had some success, and the one that I made last night, I did not take a picture of it, my 82-0 perfect NBA roster, but it was the best one that I have ever seen. It was averaging like 150 points a game and averaging like 65 or 70 rebounds a contest. It
right.
was absolutely just insane to see that team. But that, the 162-0, having a lot of fun. So, yeah, if you have any of those, send those our way. I'd love to see yours and share those out on the air. Any ones that you feel like you're in Tripp's boat of, there's no way that this team is losing a game. Would love to see what you have. again, 334-784-1685 on that side of things. But yes, we mentioned it in the intro. We mentioned it here just a few moments ago. And this is what the first 30 minutes we have slated to dominate today's show with is a proposal from the MLB and the Players Union, essentially sweeping a draft overhaul, which would include ending of high school eligibility, meaning there will not be high school athletes getting drafted into the MLB. And so the first segment's going to be a little bit more of how that impacts the MLB. And then we're going to dive into how that will change college baseball just about forever and should be a whole lot of fun. And so just looking at the, I guess I need to say happy World Cup Day as well. Yeah. We have that on.
No Christian Pulisic for the Americans.
Is that, that was confirmed, right?
Yes.
With the calf injury?
Yeah, so he will be out.
I feel like that was a relatively poor kept secret with the
right.
He practiced away from the team for 3 or 4 days, but yeah, in Seattle today, the United States Australia, and both teams have already had a shot. The United States has it in the cup right now.
Yeah, that was a good look there, right there for, is that McKinney for the U.S.? There's McKinney, yeah. So we'll be updating you guys on that now. Will we know, be able to break down with expert analysis what is going on? Not necessarily, but again, I know that Seattle Stadium, as it's being called during the World Cup,
yeah.
Is not to be confused with where the Seahawks play and Lumen Stadium. They're totally two different stadiums.
Correct. Just like it is not SoFi, it was Los Angeles Stadium.
Correct. That'll be, you know, we'll keep you updated. I'm sure that the environment will be raucous up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes. But again, the MLB is seeking basically a big-time change in the draft and the way that they would like to go about it. It's a big-time proposal. So essentially, what is happening is they will eliminate high school players from the MLB draft, any sort of eligibility. Players coming out of high school must then attend college baseball or attend college for, I believe it's 2 years before becoming draft eligible. College players will become eligible after their sophomore year, and the draft will go from 20 rounds to 12 rounds. And so that means there will be less bonus money. That means there are less players that will just be that are kind of on the cusp of being drafted, that the teams, you know, see the potential, but it's more of a long shot, basically eliminating those types of players. And so the current system is basically you graduate high school, you can get drafted, you can sign, and then you go play pro baseball. The proposed system now is graduate high school, go to college, play at least 2 years, and then you enter the MLB draft.
Yes, and I think that we'll get more into what that means for college baseball later in this half hour, but that's such an interesting change, you know, and looking at it as well with other just factoids to throw out there, the MLB draft would be go from 20 rounds to 12, so you're cutting a lot of those picks that it's guys that might go, and then they go to college, and then they go back into the draft 2 years later. Anyway, they're slashing draft bonus. More expanse, like the trading of draft picks and hard draft slots. So basically, like if you are pick number 57, you're going to make X amount of money. So that it's not like a situation where they draft a kid, they realize, oh, maybe he's not as good. We're going to pay him less than what he's picked, and which will cause him to go to the draft. They don't have to worry about that, or to college, they don't have to worry about that anymore. As well as just some other changes. MILB, minor league teams will remain at 120. There would be no reductions until 2030, and the international player system would be overhauled as well, which would be so interesting to hear how that's going to work.
Yeah, and looking at the first thought that I had was the way of money and how, believe it or not, this probably does all consist of what the dollar sign looks like. And it's looking at just the savings that the MLB would be able to essentially propose, and they would be able to save just in terms of the risk factor right now. Because right now, Major League Baseball, they pay for rookies. Ball. They pay for the complex leagues and the single A, the high A, the low A, all of the MILB, the minor league baseball organizations that are the big farm systems. And so the cost of that, you would imagine, is absolutely enormous. And so taking less players would make it to where I wonder what the value in minor league stadiums and minor league value or just the farm systems would look like, right? And so instead of the Braves having to pay for the team in Rome, the team now in Columbus, the team in Gwinnett, making it to where, okay, rather than having so many players on that side of things, we're going to keep these kids in college, and you know what? Auburn pays for those types of players. LSU pays for those types of players to remain in college. North Carolina, Arkansas, whoever the case may be, it's the college system now that's going to pay for those types of players since they have to remain in college for a couple more years. Another thought that I had was just talking about the way that high school players are so difficult to scout. You have the stories of, man, the players that get drafted number one overall out of high school, and they are the superstars of the league. I mean, when you think about the Bryce Harpers of the world, right, that's, okay, this guy's not going to go play in college for a couple of years. He is by far just better than anybody that we've seen in quite some time, the generational type of talents. Yet when you're looking at it, you have just the maturity side of things in college. You also have the physical maturity of guys when they go to college, and the competition, man. We look at what the college level looks like. Was that a United States goal?
I believe it was. Yes, sir.
Boom.
Boom. We'll have to watch the replay on that. But
speaking in basketball terms, I know that they brought it into the short corner, threw it down to the low block.
Okay, so they crossed. They took it down to the corner.
Not quite to the corner. Again, yeah, kind of
low post. They crossed it inside, and they were able to finish on a one-timer or two-timer.
Boom.
There we go. Soccer, football, or football. But anyway, to bring it back.
Football, I'm just kidding. So the physical maturity, the mental maturity, obviously, and then just looking at, I mean, we have so many people talk all about how the SEC and these top-level organizations are. It's almost like, was it an own goal? Sorry, I'm completely distracted right now. I think it was.
I think it might have been, yeah. Let's see. Puts it in to the box. Oh yeah, it hits off the shin.
It 100% was.
Wow. That's the back-to-back games the USA has struck first because of an own goal by their opponent.
The defender thought that the goalie was going to be able to stop it, and he didn't. He just kept running and ran right into...
What a statistic.
That's incredible. Good work. Thank you, Australia. We'll take a...
Come on, lads.
We'll take a goal. But the SEC, I mean, you have so many people talk about the top-end talent of that is essentially double-A baseball, if not high-A baseball. And when you look at a 20-year-old sophomore who has more data, who has more games, who has the better competition versus just being drafted out of high school, it brings up the question that I want to start by asking you of, and I feel like this is where the MLB is at, would you rather draft the 17-year-olds that has all of the tools, all of the talent, but doesn't necessarily have it tweaked, doesn't have it polished, or do you go for the 20-year-old that's producing, like a Daniel Jackson, say, just for example, in the SEC, that almost has that been there, done that maturity level that you've seen in this SEC?
Well, I look at what baseball is such a sport that your competition dictates how good you are, because yes, hitters can play, like hitters can hit, do whatever they want to do against pitchers that are throwing about 85. Maybe you have one kid throwing 90 in a high school season, depending on what state you're in. Georgia is a great high school state, Florida, Texas, California.
I was about to say, I would love to go back and see 83 to 85 in high school.
Right, yeah, but like certain states.
But the average, yeah.
The average, right. Maybe not in travel ball, but high school ball or something like that. But when you play in college, I mean, those are guys that are throwing 90 on the low end, and you're playing guys that probably could be these single A or double A pitchers, so you're getting more used to the competition. It's kind of the same debate with in football of, do you want the 5-year grad transfer or redshirt starter that played like late and performed well, or do you want the guy that's only played a year, he's got, but he's 21 years old, and you're going to be able to have him in his prime.
Yeah, well, even that, just on the high school football recruiting side of things, of do you want the five or the four or five star talent that's a 2A or a 3A player, or do you want the three star, maybe four star that's played 6A or higher football just based off the state, where there's a little bit more of the trust level based off of the talent that you played every single Friday night.
Right, but I would probably take the veteran that has seen better competition, is more mature, you know, has been through the process. I mean, I think of the movie Trouble with the Curve. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
Great movie. Great Braves movie as well. Clint Eastwood, phenomenal in that one. Justin Timberlake in that movie.
Yeah.
It's just so random that he's in a baseball movie. But, like, you could have guys like the number one prospect in that one where he couldn't hit a curveball. It was – he needed development. And I think a lot of teams would rather Auburn or Alabama or Georgia Tech or even Troy – foot that bill and foot that development than them having to waste money that they could be using to pay for superstars on the major league roster.
So again, so you're taking almost that professional model mindset of the MLB, right, of give me the guy that's a little bit older that may not need to spend 5-6 years in the minor leagues just to prove that he's ready and work his way up from low A to high A to double A and then up to the triple A level just to try and get that phone call, rather than, again, you're going to see the top end talent. And I've talked a lot about this just based off of the power numbers that you're seeing at the college level. I've made the prediction that I don't think college bets or college players will use metal bats for too much longer. This, something like this, could be a big time change. This could almost be the flip from the BB core, from the aluminum bats to the wood bats, just to see what that looks like. Because even when I was in high school, I can't tell you the last time. I mean, it was literally freshman or maybe my sophomore year, the last time playing travel ball at some of these big tournaments that were not WWBAs, that were not wood bats, were wood bat associations.
Okay.
I can't tell you the last time in high school, if I was not wearing my high school uniform, that I used a metal bat. Everything was wood bat, because that's where all of the the prospects, that's where all of the the scouts go, because that's where you're going to be developed. And it's like, yeah, okay, you get these hits with metal bats that you would not get whatsoever with wood bats. And I think that that brings up, again, the fascinating topic of, I don't think metal bats will be allowed at the college level for too much longer. And this could be a big time change to that.
Yeah. Last summer I worked over in for a baseball testing facility, and we would have metal bats for them to use. And we would say, hey, for some reason we said you couldn't use wood bats. Or you had to specifically tell us, like, hey, you can use hybrid, you cannot use a pure wood bat, because it was so, like, the numbers would just be so much different.
Right. Yeah. It shows what the metal bat does versus the
consistency
wood bat.
Of everyone using the metal bat, I think, is why they wanted to use it, especially because that's what I think Lake Point at the time was, where the testing center was. And but the wood bats, I mean, it sounded just beautiful hitting the
ball. There's nothing.
There's
nothing more satisfying, and you know a lot about pured iron shots. I'm just kidding.
No, I do not.
But you talk about just a fantastic feeling. The metal bat obviously feels incredible, but puring a wood bat with a fastball is very similar to puring an iron, where it doesn't feel like you hit anything, and it's incredible. And so that's another point of this, again, all sparking from the MLB proposal with the different draft proposals, just in terms of the bullet points and what they would like to change, diving into 8 less rounds in the MLB draft, but the biggest one being that high school players are no longer eligible to be drafted. And it does make it to where, again, we talk about how much better it is for the more developed, the more polished, proven player. But yeah, I mean, it does hurt the middle class of baseball just in something like this, because you know, the senior that worked his way from a mid-major, that has seen the talent level jump and has seen his numbers continue to rise, but the small school type of pitcher, and then that developmental prospect as well of, man, I just need my shot to get to the league, or to hear my name called and let me work my way up through the minor leagues. You feel like that's where you could could see some of these negative changes.
Sure, but I think in the college game right now, it is becoming such a transfer important market. Like, look at Georgia, where they seem to just find, all right, we go by transfer portal, OPS, you come play for Georgia. And that's just how they get these guys that can just absolutely mash baseballs. And I think what that is causing, and I think what this decision will cause, we'll talk more about that after the break, about what this how this affects the college game. But all I think a lot of those players that are the freshmen or going to be the people that would have been drafted or maybe those people that would have potentially been drafted late that probably would have still went to go play college will go play at the minor league, or not the minor league, the mid-major level, the D2 level, and either work their way up normally, or they could even possibly have these mid-major type runs where you have a Troy with a Jimmy Janicki who is a top five MLB prospect in the draft this year, play for Troy instead of, you know, that would be really, really cool to see.
Yeah, it's essentially the MLB is wanting to make college baseball a big-time farm system to where they don't have to spend the money, and I wonder what that looks like just on the salary cap side of things, trying to match and trying to look at what the Los Angeles Dodgers have done, all because of, no. But again, I think it really is the college logos are going to become, if this gets passed, a farm system for the MLB. And whether that's good, whether that's bad, it brings a little bit of uniformity into college athletics of, okay, football's never just been able to go pro. Basketball has never been able to just go pro. It's at least the one and done. But would add a little bit of uniformity on that side of things. And what would that look like for college baseball? I think it would bring a little bit of more, a whole lot more excitement, a whole lot more dominance. The NIL era has shown it, obviously, with football and basketball, baseball. Going to be the next big one that you're going to be able to see NIL, and if this gets proposed or this gets, if this works its way into fruition, the college level is going to be absolutely insane. We will talk about that, the benefits of what college baseball could look like, and some names for the Auburn Tigers that would have worn the orange and blue if this would have been proposed 5 or 6 years ago. We'll talk about that as we're just underway here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line in Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute presented by Bucks Island. July 4th, 1776. Inside Philadelphia's Pennsylvania State House, 56 men prepared to sign a document unlike any the world had ever seen. A declaration that 13 small colonies would break away from the most powerful empire on earth. If they failed, it would be treason, punishable by death. John Hancock signed first, boldly. Then the others followed, farmers, merchants, lawyers. Ordinary men risking everything. Their words, radical for the time. That all men are created equal. Now, 2.5 centuries later, that idea still echoes. One defining moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line, he is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us, taking some time to join us on your Friday afternoon, hopefully winding down towards the weekend. Man, that's a fantastic feeling to be able to say. Any weekend plans for you on your end?
Not as of right now. I know a big Father's Day weekend, yeah. So shout out to all the dads out there. Shout out my dad. I think that they...
Shout out Pops.
Shout out Pops, yeah, so... went home last weekend, so was able to see them. So I think I'm gonna be in Auburn this weekend. Just gonna figure it out, watch some baseball this weekend, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, good problem. Sounds like a pretty good problem to have, yeah. If your weekend consists of baseball and 82-0 if you're able to finally get it. Or I know you had a. Did you get the 15-0 during the commercial break?
No, we went 6-7 because of with DeMarco Murray and
this
Dalvin.
Is a company man.
Yeah, I mean DeMarco Murray and Dalvin Cook at running back. Not really a great wide receiver room. And then Brock Osweiler at quarterback. Probably could have done our. I think our running backs were perfect. It's just wide receivers and tight end and quarterback. So, but about speaking of college football, college baseball, how does it get affected by these new rules by the MLB? And I am curious to ask you this question because I think this is a great topic of discussion. With all of these players now, instead of going to the draft, your Jackson Holloway's, your Drew Jones, your Colt Emerson's, your whatnot. That get drafted out of high school and now go to college, will that cause an NIL reset in college baseball?
I mean, you have so many people talking about the Johnny Footballs of the world and what his NIL evaluation would look like. It'll be interesting to see what the setback would then look like if you have a guy who would have been a first-round draft pick coming out of high school to the MLB, not straight, but being a first-round draft pick of what that signing bonus would look like. Then if you have to go back to college or you have to go to college for a couple of years, you would imagine there has to be some sort of reset because – all of a sudden, the top cats in college baseball right now would then be overshadowed by a couple of the guys that are, we're planning on skipping out on college completely, but now we're going to be back and playing on your team.
Right, and you don't have to, I think another factor of that would be that for at least underclassmen, those freshmen and sophomores, it wouldn't be like that. The NIL was trying to bid them from going to playing in Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball where – yeah, if you're a 12th round pick and you're committed to Auburn, do I take this minor league contract or take whatever Auburn NIL is giving me? Now there's only one option so that it's not a arms race on who can offer more if they want that player or not.
Yeah, and then as much so as well, if you're an 8th round draft pick after your second year of college baseball, but you realize that there is so much talent coming in, you realize that your spot might be taken, it brings up the conversation again of, do we go ahead and take that money? Do I go ahead and move on to play pro baseball? Or do I stick it out another year? We're talking about the NIL in terms of what it has happened with basketball and how 2 years ago was really the year that changed everything just in terms of NIL, because you saw all of the fifth and sixth year players using the COVID year as well to where they stayed at the college level. It could almost be a shift of, okay, now that everybody's going to be so young, you could see those juniors and seniors taking those opportunities once they finally get them, just because they realize what the younger classes are going to look like.
Right, and I think that's going to be interesting to see also is, will there be a rule that prohibits them from getting drafted and coming back, kind of like what football and basketball has right now? Is there going to be that cutoff of a professional and a collegiate athlete a la like Charles Bediako?
Yeah, definitely. We'll continue talking about this. Give you a number that's going to blow your mind about how many high school draft prospects are going to this year's MLB Combine.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Football, Paul.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's on Australia. They just gave him a yellow card. Hit him with
I think they gave the Australian the yellow
card. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they gave it to Alessandro Circotti. Alessandro, I can't do it. I gotta get my.
Please don't.
Nope, we're good.
A free kick just outside of the penalty box for the United States. They lead it 1-0 over Australia in Seattle Stadium. Let's see this little cross.
Oh, I was about to say another own goal. We were talking during the break. Christian was saying how imagine you've worked your entire life to play in the World Cup, and you get there and you're starting the game. And you get on the scorecard, you score, own goal.
Yeah, it has your name on there, but it's listed just under the United States team. It's a pretty bad feeling. But
it's like how people are I saw some people like making like Knicks jerseys for De'Aaron Fox. It's the same idea.
Yes, yeah. It's the J.R. Smith walking into Golden State and being cheered as the MVP every time he touched the ball after the free throw that he gathered a rebound for and ran out to the 3-point line. They literally called him the MVP, which was absolutely hilarious.
But, right.
Same type of concept to where it's like, man, that's the biggest round of applause you're ever going to get from the Americans.
Right.
But continuing on with this conversation about the MLB seeking and proposing these new draft rules that would change the way the MLB looks, that would change the way the minor leagues look, and would change the way indirectly that college baseball would look forever, because the college baseball logos would essentially become farm systems for MLB, for the MLB, because high school players would not be eligible to be drafted until they played their sophomore year of college baseball. And man, you look through some of the numbers and just some of the statistics of, man, what this looks like and what this will look like if it gets passed for college baseball and for the SEC. And wanted to find an exact number to dive into. There were three words in my mind that I was trying to find. Number was the one that I was trying to officially say yes. My number.
Whittily.
Whittily, these numbers are crazy. talking about the MLB and the draft combine that. Trying to think, I don't even know what word. There was another word that had an L in there that I was trying to.
The list.
I don't know.
Just read the number.
Yeah. But it's talking about there were 96 high school prospects that were selected and signed for in the 2025 MLB draft. 96 high school athletes that essentially said, you know what? I don't need to play college baseball. I'm going to go ahead and play professional baseball at some sort of level. This season, there were 334 players that were selected to the MLB Combine this year.
That's a lot.
334 players throughout high school and throughout college. 140 of them were high schoolers.
Wow.
140 of the 334 prospects, essentially, were from the high school level. So imagine if all 140 players had to come back and play college baseball for at least 2 years. And I understand that probably, especially now in the NIL era, to even just take half of them, say that 70 were to go on and sign and take these contracts professionally rather than choosing the college baseball route, even if it was just 70, that is 70 top prospects that the MLB is looking at that are now going to be joining essentially a different organization, and for now, the NCAA. My goodness, you look at what that would do for the college game. That is incredible. That is insane to think about.
Right. You know, we were talking about a quote from, not related to me, Ben Upton of D1 Baseball and 11.7 Sports. I have a brother that's Ben Upton as well, which makes it kind of confusing
He's not as cool.
About. Yeah, he's cool.
The professional one.
Right. Thank you. Good save.
Yeah.
But no, so Mr. Upton of D1 Baseball said that if this gets passed, that the college baseball could become a bigger and better product than college basketball could be.
Yeah. I mean, at first you're like, what? No. I mean, college basketball is absolutely insane, but look at the and this sounds as if I'm not a fan, and I absolutely love it. I love March Madness like I love bowl season, and you can almost rest in peace to both of those. But March Madness, I mean, you go back and you look at I don't want to say the lack of excitement, but the lack of excitement in terms of the general college basketball fan. Because tell me the biggest upset that happened in the field of 64 in March Madness.
Was it? I mean, I feel like it was got to be like a 5. It was like a 5-12, like a 6-11. Like it wasn't a.
But the fact that you can't sit there and be like, you know what? It was UMBC over Virginia, or it was
High Point over Wisconsin.
Yeah, in round one, and after that,
yeah,
that was so. Again, one big time upset. Go look at just the regionals in general in college baseball this year. Look at the super regionals in college baseball. Look at Omaha this year. And the overall excitement that is being built and that has been built and now the public media is catching up to in terms of college baseball, you then add this and another reason. Essentially, this kid was the number three MLB draft prospect out of high school. Now he has to go play for Oregon State. He has to go play for USC. He has to go play for whoever for 2 years. The excitement that that would bring, it would feel like a rehab stint for somebody in the minor leagues. I'm from Gwinnett, Georgia. I follow the Gwinnett Stripers.
Right.
Ellie De La Cruz for the Cincinnati Reds is in a rehab AAA stint right now playing in Gwinnett, and they are using that to sell tickets. Like, how cool is that? Imagine what that would do for the college game if you had somebody like, you know what, Bobby Witt Jr. is now going to be playing for LSU and he's making his way to wherever, or a Bryce Harper of the world, a Gunnar Henderson of the world, and we'll get to that here in just a moment as well. But imagine these types of names that are top MLB prospects that are going to be wearing college jerseys for 2 years if, and this is still a big if this gets passed.
Right, and I think that the best time for college baseball to strike the iron while it is hot is now. I know that, and I think that is because of A, the amount of talent that's going to be put if this passes. I think that, again, you say it like a Bryce Harper. You think about what if, like in college basketball, let's say, it's kind of similar where, man, Cooper Flagg's coming to town, or those, you know, those top can't miss. Like, imagine if Victor Wembanyama had played in college basketball. Every single, like, we joke about the Bronny James effect for Auburn back in the day. There was the running joke of, well, they were only coming to see Bronny James when Auburn fans just packed out the jungle at that time relentlessly. Imagine that for college baseball. That would be so, so cool. And another thing I think that will help college baseball is if there's an MLB lockout, the premier baseball product going on in the United States of America would be the college game.
No
Imagine
kidding.
The eyes and the people that might live in Columbus or that might go, hey, we don't have Clingstones baseball right now. Let's head up to Auburn, up 280, or to go watch the Tigers. Or, hey, you know, we live in Rome, Georgia. We're Emperor's people. We get Emperor season tickets. Man, let's drive down to Atlanta, or let's drive up to Chattanooga even to see the Mocs.
Yeah.
That would be – I think they actually don't have a baseball team. But
the point still stands.
Just
what baseball would grow, not only throughout the South, but throughout the entire country. And that's a completely different point.
Especially around the country. I mean, I think that so many of the MILB teams are in the Southeast. You look at the states of North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama has a ton. Imagine if even in those states of like where they might not have a minor league team or might be a small minor league team out west. It's like, man, we can't go watch the Salt Lake City Bees. Let's drive up. Let's see what's going on in Utah. Let's see what's going on at BYU. That would bring so many fans to the college game and continue to build the regionality that I think college baseball is the last true sport to have. That would be so incredible.
You look at what a team like Vanderbilt has gone through in their college game, where you go back to the dominance that they have had in the Dansby Swanson eras, where, man, the Vandy boys were just incredible. I remember when I was in middle school and even early high school, and I'm sure there's somebody out there that knows what I'm talking about. It's changed a little bit now to like the travel ball vlogs, but I remember watching all sorts of vlogs and those 20-minute videos on, man, the Vandy boys, but when they were in high school, of playing these teams and playing these tournaments down in Florida or wherever the case was, and then getting to college and going to college and seeing like the recaps of the series and just the overall dominance that Vandy has had. The only reason at that point that Vanderbilt, I guess up to this point, had lost a little bit of their dominance was because three or four players in just about every single high school recruiting class went pro. They signed pro contracts and did not play for Vanderbilt. And so just bringing that perspective into, holy cow, the overall excitement that every single recruiting class could bring for these top end sports that want to promote and want to bring so much attention and value to baseball. It's absolutely crazy to think about. I mean, look at the Auburn Tigers that, as of the last couple of years.
Oh, there we go, baby. Is that going to be offsides? A header.
You scared me. I wasn't looking.
Sorry. Goodness. Sorry. Oh, yeah, they're going to say offsides. Boo. Anyways, continue. I'm sorry.
Squirrel. I want to watch it now. That was the one time I chose to look out the window instead of.
Well,
How dare I do that?
Can I make a point real quick?
That no. Would, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
So you have a chance to catch up on what's going on. Basically, with also the international draft, I'd be very curious to see what the dates and deadlines are for those, because what if they end up saying, like, hey, you have to be the same age? Well, all the best competition is going to be in the college.
Yeah.
How would that impact international recruits? You kind of see it in college basketball with some of these guys. Look at Illinois right now. What if you could have guys that, yeah, maybe they're from Columbia and would play in the international league, or they'd be in the minor league, come over to America and play. You have more, more Eric Guevaras and stuff like that of the world playing in the college ranks. Imagine Shohei Ohtani playing in college baseball, because that's where the best competition is, that he could get ready for the MLB.
I know there was international. It says an international draft would be implemented for every player outside the United States. And so I guess it's the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico. And so the minimum age would move from 16 to 18. And so any of those players, I guess, if they wanted to play, they'd play collegiate baseball. And the minimum age for the domestic draft would be 20 on September 1st. College players would be eligible again after their sophomore year, opposed to their junior year currently. And so you help that out a little bit of forcing them to go to college, but you take away a year that they would need to need to be playing. All draft picks would be traded, the reduction of the draft lottery teams, and obviously the competitive balance choices.
They gave the goal. They said he was not offsides.
Oh, wow.
Boom.
So, okay, pardon total ignorance. He was offsides, but did not touch it until the ball went off the cross post or the post.
I think that resets it, because offsides, if you don't know, is it does not matter where he is when the ball, he touches the ball. It's where he is when the ball is kicked. Correct?
Right.
And so I think hitting it off a post resets it as a neutral object, so that once it.
So even if he was still offsides, it makes it to where he's not anymore?
I believe if he is onsides when the ball hits off the post, might be what they're looking at.
Unless it's the middle player right here. This does terrible radio. It was.
Yeah, so it was the guy.
So
that
there were
onsides.
Two United States players that were offsides, but they were not the ones that touched it. It was the one American that was onsides
that touched it. Okay.
Look at this one, because it's the guy that jumped. He didn't touch it initially. Wow.
Boom. Very surprised they also didn't look at a potential penalty because he touched the goalie. But
2-0. United States as you approach halftime. Okay. That answers a lot, because I didn't think that changed, but
right.
Makes a little bit more sense. But before we head to break, again, we talked about the dominance that Vandy has had over the past, I guess they had over the past decade plus, of what that looked like before a lot of their guys chose to go the professional route. I mean, going back and looking at, imagine if Gunnar Henderson had to play 2 years at Auburn, because Gunnar was an Auburn signee. Guys like Kevin McGonigal, guys like Colt Emerson. You guys know what those guys are all doing right now? Yeah, they're all playing and starting professionally. Gunnar Henderson, obviously with the Orioles, that is top 10 in the MLB in home runs right now. Kevin McGonigal having a fantastic year for the Tigers. Colt Emerson, as of late, playing with the Mariners. All three of those guys would have been Auburn Tigers if the way of the world would have worked. They would have been playing inside of Plainsman Park. You talk about the energy and the atmosphere that those three names, obviously not playing all at the same time, but after the Omaha run that Auburn had in 19, they would have been, okay, yeah, cool. Now you're signing Gunnar Henderson to that team that's still very young,
right,
and would have been able to play with a lot of those guys. How cool would that have been to just see the overall excitement? And that's only the Auburn perspective, that hasn't had the same number of guys lost to the professional draft that LSU and Vanderbilt and Tennessee has had, at least over their history, just because of the dominance that teams like that had in the early 2010s. But man, the excitement that the college game could bring is already bringing. There is more publicity and more hype and more excitement. Look at it right here. You can see, yep,
he was
the
onside.
One player that was onside. That's crazy. But the overall excitement that the college game has brought in terms of baseball as of late is very, very rewarding. It's very satisfying for me to see, as this has been, again, I've told you, Omaha is my favorite time of year, just being able to sit down and watch so many innings of baseball and so many different ways of playing the game and so many different strategies and teams like a Troy or an Oklahoma that are underdog stories. Although Oklahoma, yes, is in the SEC, you compare that with the upsets that did not happen in March Madness, right? So you have maybe a handful, but you can't sit there and be like, okay, well, I can't necessarily think about it. Oh, well, I can think of St. Mary's upsetting UCLA twice and knocking off the number one overall seed. I can think about Oklahoma beating Georgia Tech on their home fields. I can think about Ole Miss beating Auburn. Like, those are big time, even just Milwaukee beating Auburn in game one. Like, those are big time upsets that has brought so much attention and positive media towards college baseball that's just step one of what could happen.
Yeah, it's going to improve the game so much. And I'm so excited to see if this gets passed, what that will look like for all these teams and recruiting and all that stuff. And it's going to make it a valuable product where, especially in an age where we're already having to have conversations of, are certain sports profitable? Are certain sports should be subsidized by the university? Yeah. Baseball could catch itself a golden ticket and become the third high revenue sport for college athletics if this gets passed.
Yeah, rather than just certain places that profit from college baseball, it would be just about every single one of them. So really, really excited on what could be happening. Again, there's pros and cons at both levels, but from the college perspective, the excitement that would bring of the MLB's proposal of sweeping the draft, making it from 12 or making it from 20 rounds to 12 rounds, taking or getting rid of rather high school players being eligible, I think that brings a whole lot of excitement to what the college game is set to bring if this all gets passed. We'll take a break. We'll quickly come back and wrap up hour number one before we dive into a fun football conversation to start hour number two. We're back right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And got a text over the commercial break that listed a couple of names. And man, during that, it made me want to find a couple of more. But it was essentially just imagine if Mike Trout had to play college baseball because, again, he was drafted 25th overall in the first round in 2009 out of New Jersey and arguably the greatest player of all time. I think that's worth the conversation. Injury bug has obviously plagued his career in the MLB, but looking at other names, you have guys like Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke, Joe Mauer, Manny Machado, just to name a few that are off the AI level side of things. But it's like, man, you think about it recently of just the Auburn players or the SEC players, but man, look at the guys that are playing not even professional baseball, that are superstars in the MLB that are either from the international draft or chose to skip out on college baseball and what that would have looked like if that was 10 or 15 years ago, the excitement level that would have been with college baseball.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Imagine, like, I'm trying to think who would be in coming out of the draft at that point of like Connor Griffin would be in LSU's shortstop right now.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Kevin McGonigal, Cole Emerson would have been third baseman, shortstop for Auburn. Like, that is so crazy to think about. And it also be like, hey, what if guys want to stay longer? Because, like, man, we got these top prospects coming up. I'm going to be a senior leader on this team. Imagine what could happen.
Yeah, Manny Machado, Mookie Betts, Bobby Witt Jr., Gunnar Henderson, Jackson Holliday, Jackson Churio, Drew Jones, Marcelo Meyer, Max Clark, Riley Green. I mean, these are dudes that are stars in their league and stars just in terms of what the MLB has to offer. Hour number one in the books. We flip to football here on this Free For All Friday. We hope you'll be a part of the conversation. 334-321-1390. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
We know the Auburn running back room is absolutely loaded, but is RB1 not getting the respect that he deserves?
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I am Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton, and we're having an absolute blast here in the studio this afternoon. And looky there, I see sunshine in the parking lot.
Finally.
Your rain puddle, your swimming puddle is gone. I apologize, but no way that it starts up later, right? What? No way.
Let's see. Let's check the unnamed weather app.
Unnamed weather app that we are not.
See, I'm getting better at it. Only 15% and 20% chance of thunderstorms around 5 to 6 p.m. So
okay.
Hopefully, the tomorrow it will start right back up, and it actually is projected to rain every day for the next week and a half.
Let's go. Why would you want it any other way?
Right.
Honestly,
I mean.
As long as it gets out by the fall, we'll be okay. Cool everything down a little bit, make it to where Jordan Hare is just, it feels perfect like it always does.
Yeah, it feels perfect, it just doesn't look perfect on the field sometimes.
That was all the past, okay?
Yeah.
We're in the future.
We're in the future
now.
We're not looking close anymore. We're here.
We are here. And here in hour number one, we talked a lot of baseball news and a conversation that took up pretty much the entire hour, talking about the MLB seeking a sweeping draft overhaul, including the end of high school draft eligibility, basically making it to where they are cutting the draft, or they are proposing cutting the draft from 20 rounds to 12 rounds. That also includes making it to where high school players are not eligible to be drafted. They must go to college for at least 2 years. You will become draft eligible after your sophomore year. There's also a lot more that goes into it just in terms of draft picks being able to be traded, a reduction of draft lottery teams, the minimum age and signing bonuses and the salary caps, all of those types of things. But we talked about it from the MLB perspective and how you are basically trying to make the SEC and the top college baseball teams your farm systems, because if players get an extra year or two at the college level to be able to mature mentally, physically, emotionally, of the ups and downs and the highs and lows of what baseball does and what baseball brings, but you're able to produce on the field and bring that sort of talent, it makes it to where you're a much easier draft prospect, because there's not that risk factor of, okay, yeah, you are a fantastic baseball player. You're essentially a 4-star or essentially a 5-star athlete, yet you're facing 80 poo right down the middle. And again, it takes away a little bit of the risk factor. We also talked about how that would bring a hell of a lot of excitement towards the college baseball perspective, and how we've already seen the college baseball world kind of wake up the media by storm, just in terms of what the regionals had done, the super regionals had done, and what Omaha is continuing to do and continuing to look like, the overall excitement that that has brought. And by no means am I saying that it's being transferred from March Madness to the NCAA baseball postseason, but I'm also not saying that it's not because of the lack of excitement that the March Madness NCAA postseason is bringing and the excitement that baseball has brought. And so all of that was in our number one. Also talked about, man, some of the names that would be playing or would have played college baseball, not only for Auburn, but just throughout all of the college levels, what that would look like for every single recruiting class, what that would look like for the top level talent. You'd go back to again the Vandy boy days when Vanderbilt just absolutely dominated, and how their recruiting classes and their team started slipping just because they had what felt like three or four players every single year declare for the MLB draft and take their first round, second round, third round draft money. But NIL is obviously playing a big factor in that, and now this could play a big time factor in that as well. All of that was in our number one, a really, really fun conversation. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in our number two, we switch gears and look at some football, looking at recruiting with Alex Golish, seeing how well the Tigers have done. We mentioned it yesterday, but the Tigers, another Maryland player coming down that DJ Durkin pipeline to Jordan-Hare Stadium in the near future. Another one committing tonight as well. We'll talk about our College World Series finals predictions as Oklahoma takes on North Carolina tomorrow. But we'll also talk about Jeremiah Cobb, and maybe he's getting some disrespect in the national headlines. But if you want to join in the conversation, phone lines are wide open for the entirety of our number 2-334-321-1390. If you want to text in on the text box as well, 334-784-1OTL, 334-784-1685. And Christian, I found a ranking this morning I sent to you, and we were decided to talk about running backs in college football. And one name that Auburn fans know pretty, pretty, pretty well, low on the list.
Is that three pretties?
Pretty, pretty good.
Wow. Okay.
Larry David?
I like it.
Thank you.
I did not pick up that that's what that was, but
yeah.
Right over my head. Apologies.
No worries. I've been watching a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm on one of the unnamed streaming sites. And so that's been kind of what I've been watching recently. And so that's kind of what me and our Let's Go Brandon have been talking about off air a lot. Because he's seen a little bit of it. So we've just been talking about what I've been watching and laughing about it. So,
well, again, yes, this is a really, really good article, and would definitely love, again, anybody's opinion on this, whether or not you agree, whether or not you disagree, just on the overall excitement. It's ranking the top running backs in college football for the 2026 season. We'll start by diving down 10 through 1, talk about some of the guys that Auburn is set to face this year, some guys that they will not face that are in the Southeastern Conference, and then just the overall levels of confidence that we have for these types of names, and then where some of the Auburn running backs, or I guess where the Auburn running back has his name, because, you know, spoiler alert, it's not inside the top 10. Nate Shepard for Duke sits at number 10. He is tied with Caleb Hawkins, who is also at number 10. Not going to dive into a whole lot of that. LJ Martin at BYU, a name that you've heard for a couple of years, 6'2", 225 pounds, led the Big 12 in rushing, and surpassed 100 yards rushing in 10 games last season, and rushed for 105 of the first 7 games before, again, a little bit of that injury, but continued playing and still had a really, really good season. He sits at number 9, a guy that I really like, I know you really like as well, Justice Haynes for Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
not only just because of the rushing yards, but his ability to block and his ability to catch passes out of the backfield. I think that's something that hasn't been utilized in his game the way that it needs to. But after spending a couple of years at Alabama, went to Michigan, now is going to be at Georgia Tech. And so a lot of excitement for what he is going to bring. Excited to see what he is able to do in the ACC. Again, a guy that if you look at where he went to high school, I would say that I know relatively well. You don't have to actually.
I am going to Google it.
Okay. Well,
Blessed Trinity.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're good at football and good at all sports. But yeah, looking as well as some other guys on the list that stand out, two Texas running backs back to back, Hollywood Smothers and Relique Brown, two transfer backs, Brown out of Arizona State and Smothers over to NC State.
I also apologize. Did you say Blessed Trinity?
That's what the unnamed search engine AI said.
Oh, okay. That may have been where he started, but I'll let you take one more guess of why I know the name.
Was he a red elephant or was he a wolf?
I have no connection with red elephants.
Well, I mean, we are doing great radio right now.
He went to Buford.
Oh, okay. So he was a wolf. Yes, got you. Well, I know that Gainesville is a rival of Buford.
Maybe a little bit more now. Was not when I was.
Yes.
Way back in my day, I was not there. No, that's
apologies.
So I was excited to see him.
The next line down. It highlighted the unnamed search engine AI highlighted which school, but didn't highlight the second school.
It's why AI, man, just rotting the little kid's brain. Man, that's an elbow.
And that's almost a handball from Australia.
you mentioned, yes, Relique Brown and then Hollywood Smothers. A very interesting story with Smothers being at NC State, committing to Alabama, and then decommitting from Alabama in the transfer portal and committing to Texas. And so that's been something that I've talked a long time about, Steve Sarkisian, and this was going back to the Quinn Ewers days of, man, if you didn't force Ewers to drop back and throw the ball 51 times a game, the success that offensive line and the success that Ewers would ultimately have just based off the running game, I hope that that's also going to be, selfishly, I guess, just from the college football perspective, I hope that that's the way that Arch Manning is. I mean, you don't need him to throw the ball 50 times a game, but if you make it to where he only needs to throw it 30 times a game, makes it that much more effective.
Right. I mean, Archer's also so much better of a runner than Quinn was the football. So you're going to see a lot more designed quarterback runs or read options with those two running backs. And with the way Texas has played defense in the past, it's going to help them to have that running game so that their defense is not on the field all the time. Not that their defense hasn't been good. I mean, you see guys like Anthony Hill Jr., Colin Simmons. Now they have Will Muschamp, who I think is one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, now is the head defensive coordinator. That's a defense that, if they can run the ball effectively, does not need to even be on the field as much, and which makes them even more potent.
Looking at the top five, again, the ESPN released an article, yesterday morning, talking about the best running backs in college football. We talked 6 through 10, or I guess 10 through 6 now. What was that?
I'll tell you during break.
Okay.
I've gotten two pieces of really good news in the past like 5 minutes. So
that was
the Rossiel Iglesias.
Yeah, that was
hand up.
A home run celebration as you touch.
This is a home run celebration.
Okay.
Both of them have been.
Okay. Very.
You'll
very
agree
fair.
With one of them.
Well,
for
we
sure.
will.
We'll talk about it off air.
Okay. The NIL
Sorry.
Deal working its way into
yes.
fruition. Isaac Brown at number 5 for Louisville. I don't think that there's too much argument on him and that side of things. Had nearly 900 rushing yards last season, averaged 8.8 yards per carry. Also had 13 receptions, only 7 touchdowns. But my goodness, you talk about the elite speed and the big play talent that he brings for this Louisville, this Jeff Braun team. I think there's a lot of overall excitement on that side of things. Number 4, Mark Fletcher. I think that is somebody that emerged, at least in popularity, throughout the college football playoff. Had almost 1,200 yards on the ground last season, averaged 5.5 a carry, also had 17 receptions for 140 receiving yards and 14 touchdowns. And yeah, the article says the exact same thing. Cemented himself among the sport's elite big game performers during Miami's playoff run last season. 507 rushing yards. yards on 6.8 yards per carry across the four college football playoff games, including 172 yards against A&M, 112 yards and two touchdowns against Indiana in the national title game, even though you didn't come away with the trophy. I would say individually, those are some pretty solid numbers. Fortunately, so far, Auburn, at least not in the regular season, is set to face any of these names from 10 all the way to 3, or I guess to 4, but then you work your way to number 3. And Ahmad Hardy, another name that Auburn is not going to see, and I don't think there's too many complaints by not having to see Mr. Hardy on the football field.
No, he is. I'd argue he's the top running back in the country. I understand that he is a, he was hurt with a gunshot wound this summer, and I think if he can come back, I hope he comes back to full forces. He is absolutely dominant, and I think that in an offense where Missouri is going to rely on him bringing in a new quarterback for the Tigers, it's going to be really, really interesting to see where, like, how this turns out for the Tigers. And but the top two, you said it, Auburn plays both these guys. Jaden Ball, a Florida guy I've talked about yesterday as another top running back, had 1,100 rushing yards, 33 catches, so a dual threat guy, 10 touchdowns, pretty dominant. And number one, Kawan Lacy, a guy that almost was an LSU Tiger, decided to stay home, has 1,500 rushing yards and then 24 touchdowns in 2025. That's pretty solid. That's in the regular season, at least. That's two a game.
Yeah, he had 23 carries in six games that he played in as a freshman at Missouri, but then found again, the ideal scenario, the idea home in Oxford, and tied Ole Miss's single season rushing record. Was a Doak Walker Award finalist, and obviously played a very, very big factor into what Ole Miss was able to do last season. 5'11", 205 pounds, and they're talking about how he is more elusive, and he did a lot more behind a worse offensive line that they're going to have this year. And then you bring a guy like Trinidad Chambliss that obviously has a whole lot of excitement. He is listed as the number one overall running back, according to E.R. Letterman and Max Olson of ESPN. But a name that we did not mention was Jeremiah Cobb. And his name is on this list. It doesn't necessarily have a number next to it, but we'll dive into the quote-unquote also receiving votes and talk about, man, how there's some names on here that are absolutely insane and why Jeremiah Cobb, I think, deserves a little bit more respect. We'll dive into that and continue this conversation on the other side of this break. We're just underway here in hour number two. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, we highly invite you to do so. 334-321-1390 is the phone line. If you would like to share your thoughts on any running back rankings or anything that you agree with, disagree with, or anything in the world of sports that's on your mind, again, 334-321-1390. The text box always open as well at 334-784-1685. We're just underway here in hour number two. We're back right after this.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here in hour number two on the Friday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for spending a little bit of your Friday afternoon here with us. Looking off to our right, the United States with a, or my right, your left.
Yes.
United States up 2-0 on Australia.
Just after halftime.
Yeah, 56 minutes into the contest, and we're diving into an ESPN article talking about the top 10 running backs in college football for the 2026 season, and did so with the fact that there are only two in the top 10 that Auburn has to deal with, and those being number two and number one, just with Jaden Ball at Florida as number two, and then Kawan Lacy at Ole Miss listed as the number one overall running back of 2026. But do want to dive into some of the names also receiving votes. And Nate Frazier is the first one for Georgia. And I am relatively surprised that his name is not on this list. You have Antoine Raymond from Rutgers. You have Jordan Marshall from Michigan. Did we lose him?
It appears so, yes.
Well, we had a phone call. Apologies if we lost you. 334-321-1390 if you have any thoughts on this side of things. But Bo Jackson from Ohio State is on this list. And then there's Jeremiah Cobb thrown in there with the rest of these names. Listed, if you do the math, is what, number 16 according yes. to this list? The 16th best running back in college football for this season. Your thoughts when you first saw his name?
I think it makes sense. I think that looking at some of these guys of what numbers they were able to put up, almost all of them are over 1,000-yard rushers or at least close, and the guys that aren't your Isaac Browns and your Justice Haynes of the world did not play full seasons due to injury. So that is part of why they're not. I think Jeremiah Cobb is an incredible talent, and I think that he is going to be at least in terms of what the SEC has to offer, one of the better running backs in the SEC. So I think that being still in the consideration is fine. I mean, there are a couple guys I'm a little suspect on, but I think the numbers just help them, like a Nate Shepard. I understand Caleb Hawkins being number 10. He was phenomenal at North Texas. That offense was incredible. Same thing with LJ Martin, I understand. Maybe Justice Haynes coming off an injury, you could put Jeremiah Cobb in the conversation with. But looking at some of the guys he's around receiving votes, Nate Frazier, Antoine Raymond, you said earlier, Bo Jackson at 15, not Auburn Bo Jackson, Ohio State Bo Jackson. But I think that those are guys that I think Jeremiah Cobb might have the slight edge over. Nate Frazier, Jeremiah Cobb would be a great conversation to have to look at the numbers. But for Cobb in his first season of RB1, 175 carries, just under 1,000 yards. I think if there's not a couple Damari Allison games earlier in the season, maybe Jeremiah gets those carries and gets those yards, but maybe it's also Omar Mabson or Cam Edwards because of his injury. I think that Jeremiah can be a top running back this year. It's just going to really depend on the O-line, which was not great last year. It needs to be better this year.
Yeah, I mean, and how good of a problem it is if you have Jeremiah Cobb as the 16th ranked running back in college football for the 2026 class, because there are so many different backs that are going to have carries, and you have a running quarterback in that as well. And you mentioned Damari Alston playing three or four games to where that took at least, I mean, even if that's eight carries a game, I mean, if you average what Jeremiah Cobb did at 5.5 carries a game, I mean, even just five carries is, you know, 25, 30 yards thereabout. Right. And so that right there is another 100, 120 yards based off of how you look at it. And so Jeremiah Cobb listed as the 16th best running back in college football this season.
Yes, and we get to the phone lines. We should have known the second I said, talking about how the offensive line needed to get better. It's Spectre calling into the show. Buddy Spectre, you are on the line, my friend. How are you doing?
All right. Well, you guys don't forget, if Jeremiah Cobb had an offensive line for the last couple of years, he probably would have been in the top five.
I think that's definitely a point in there as well. The fact of, and that's kind of been the storyline for Auburn receivers or Auburn running backs of the past, right? I mean, you look at the Tank Bigsby's, the Jarquez Hunters of the world, man, you give them even just a top half offensive line in the SEC, that brings so much dominance back to that running back room that already had success, but the fact that they did so with some of these blaring categories showing the lack of offensive line.
Yeah, you can go all the way back to Bo Nix if you want to. If we had good offensive line, he would have been our Heisman Trophy candidate.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Well, I just want to mention that so you guys keep that offensive line in the back of your mind right there and bring it up front.
Yes,
of course.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
You have
we'll
to,
do.
Right?
We have
you
to.
Have to. And again, when you're looking at some of these conversations, appreciate the call, Spectre. Yeah, again, the offensive line, obviously a big conversation for a lot of these teams, which goes to show why you have guys like Raelique Brown and like Hollywood Smothers at Texas based off of that offensive line. You have guys like Mark Fletcher at Miami because of their offensive line. Ahmad Hardy because of Missouri's. Jaden Balls of Florida, I think that's a little bit more of just the true true talent of Jaden Ball. And then Kawan Lacy, I think there's a lot of expectations for that offensive line, but obviously some question marks on that side of things too.
Right. And looking again at the competitions compared to Nate Frazier, the Georgia offensive line is not what it has been in the past 5 years, 5 to 10 years, but they are still a dominant group no matter what way you slice it. Antoine Raymond is, again, is a, probably a true talent type of guy at Rutgers. Michigan, Ohio State, Tennessee, even going down to like Indiana, LSU, Utah, all of these teams have fantastic offensive lines. And they, if you were to put Jeremiah Cobb behind any of them, I think he's we're in a conversation of top 8, if not top 10 at the very worst.
I mean, again, I think all things considered, if Jeremiah Cobb is the 16th best running back in college football this season, obviously multiple different ways you can look at it, but I think that brings a whole lot of excitement because, again, this is a running back room that is going to split carries with Jeremiah Cobb, with Mekhi Davenport, with Bryson Washington, with Omar Mabson, with Alvin Henderson, oh yeah, and then Byron Brown's a pretty dang good runner in there as well. And so if you have a guy like that that's getting 5 to 10 less carries a game but staying healthy, I think if you're number 16, I think you're in a pretty dang good spot. We'll take a break. Music kicking us out of here. When we come back, another Eagle has landed and another one expected by some of the experts to find their home in Auburn, Alabama as well. We talk about that as well as a whole lot more football when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Free for All Friday edition of On the Line. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. If you would like to be a part of the show, still a little bit of time to do so at 334-321-1390. And we move from the running back conversation to, I guess, one thing that doesn't directly talk running backs, but with two running backs in the recruiting class for the Auburn Tigers, I still think it brings a whole lot of excitement to what is happening with Alex Golish and the recruiting trail. But Auburn strikes yet again. This was a couple of days ago, but able to pair that now with hopefully some more good news tonight as well. But the Maryland pipeline continuing to work out for DJ Durkin. The three-star safety Kenyere Crum has committed to the Auburn Tigers, 6'2" from Hyattsville, Maryland. And so, man, how nice is it seeing more and more defensive players, defensive backs getting involved in this recruiting class, as well as what we've already seen with the offensive line and the running back room, as well as Gary Chapman at quarterback.
Yeah, it's been absolutely phenomenal picking up a big defensive back commit, a safety commit, the I believe only one thus far in the class. So that's a big position of need that Alex Golish is able to fill. It's
I believe he's the second, is he not? I'm pulling it up right now.
The way I'm looking at it right now, it has like Nash Johnson, Aiden Wiggins, and Chance Gilbert all listed as corners on three. So maybe on another website he's listed, someone else is listed as a safety, but the only one that I can see is Crum.
I see Chance Gilbert, but regardless.
Yes, it's defensive back.
Correct, yeah.
But adding to that defensive back room, that's been a position where Auburn has been able to go to and not really have to worry about in recent years. It's been guys, maybe they might not have the biggest name brand on them, but even going back to like Keontae Scott when he was at Auburn was still a really good defensive back. And you saw this group this year play out of their mind, especially when they had the push from the front seven.
Man, national champion runner-up.
I know.
Keontae Scott, who, funny enough, had a lot of struggles at Auburn. We mentioned the overall talent, but man, when they made that position change in the secondary, there was some frustration, and now you've seen what Miami was able to do with him. But still, again, a fantastic recruiting class that's set up right now. Auburn sits at number 14. There's been a couple of other SEC teams that have made some noise, and so at least looking at 24/7 Sports, Auburn the 14th ranked recruiting class. But again, you can do that with what you will. It's June, and I look at that from just the word commitment as a whole versus the lack thereof for other schools. It's probably not the most popular thing to say on Auburn Radio, and I know that you feel a little bit more strongly about it than I do, but even looking at the Alabama perspective, which they just picked up a four-star cornerback flipped from Vanderbilt to Alabama 12 minutes ago, actually. But
imagine that we're talking about a Vanderbilt player flipping to Alabama and it being a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, Alabama, they are, you know, they do have the best recruit in the number one quarterback, Elijah Haven. They have Nigel Newkirk, Trent Seaborn as well at quarterback, Ty Phillips. So really focusing on the offensive side of the football, only one defensive commit in A.J. Pauley. And I think that, you know, they will pick up and they will get the Bama bump and they will get their guys, you know. But I will say, and I'll have to ask your opinion on this because I don't know if we've talked about this on air about in-state versus out-of-state recruiting. Kalen DeBoer, 25% of this class is in-state. Auburn, that's 11. Only, I believe, two commits, Isaac McNeil and Donovan Moore in the state of Alabama. What was your thoughts on like the out-of-state recruiting versus in-state recruiting, especially in the state of Alabama?
I mean, in the state of Alabama, I mean, you want to dominate your state, and I mean, that's been a key point of emphasis over the past couple of years. That was one thing that Hugh Freeze prioritized. And, gosh, was it last year or was it 2 years ago, excuse me, that Auburn had 9 of the top 10, and I think it was 11 of the top 13 or 14 players in the state of Alabama committed to the Auburn Tigers. And so, obviously, yeah, the in-state rivalry, and that's why, I mean, the Iron Bowl is biggest rivalry in sports because of the talent that's in the state of Alabama, especially the top end talent that's in the state of Alabama. You obviously still want to dominate that, but again, I'll look at that a little bit more later when it comes to football season, because like what we've talked about, Auburn's in a unique spot in terms of you haven't seen the success on the field, and obviously with a year one head coach that builds even more question marks just in terms of the Auburn perspective. I don't think there's question marks on the success that Alex Golish has had. But obviously just the see it to believe it, the belief factor and not having to sell hope anymore that you feel like Auburn's had to do for quite some time of, man, you can be the class that helps turn this around. You can be the one that's known as turning everything and building the success from the ground up and bringing Auburn football back to what it was. You can only do that for so long. You can only sell hope for so long and it work. You're at the point now where we keep talking about the proof of concept of needing to actually see the wins translate. And this season's obviously going to be such a big factor, as every single year is. But again, a year one head coach being able to bring a winning record and hype around a football program to where, man, the recruiting class can jump in and it's not, we need you to save this program. We need you to build back up this program. It's okay. We've already laid this foundation. Look at what we were able to do in just year one. Now come be a part of what we are doing. Come be a part of the success. Make it to where this is just a joy to be a part of. And I think that Alex Golish has done everything that he can do so far, again, without coaching a game. It was Brad Law, who we talked to yesterday, that said people are trying to hold that above his head of, yeah, well, he hasn't even coached a game. Let's calm down the excitement. And it's like, yeah, well, he couldn't have coached a game. And so the excitement level is it's very raw of, man, just the excitement level that you're seeing over the summer with all of the Eagles posted on Twitter, on X, formerly known as Twitter. And everything that's needing to be checked off has been checked off by Alex Golish, by Mr. Warsaw, by Alex Fagan. These guys are doing everything that they need to do. Again, the Maryland pipeline continuing to work its way down to the plains. A three-star safety, Kenyere Crum, committed to the Tigers a couple of days ago. 6 foot, 200 pounds out of Hyattsville, Maryland. And I'll say that high school is pretty popular just in terms of what Auburn is hoping to do, because there's a four-star edge rusher that Auburn has heard about and the Auburn fans have heard about for quite some time, Mr. James Pace, James Pace III. Oh, yeah, also from Hyattsville, Maryland, also from the same high school as Kenyere Crum, and his crystal ball to the Auburn Tigers.
Yes, James Pace III, again, from that DeMartha Catholic in Hyattsville, Maryland. a top 150 player. People think that he's one of the seven Eagles, and he's choosing between Auburn, Tennessee, and Colorado. So I think that with that, you know, you have, it says on at least 247 that Coleman Hutzler is recruiting him, and they were able to bring him in on his first visit of the three top schools that he has. And that would be a really big pickup for this Auburn Tiger team. Another defensive lineman, someone that has a little bit of size at 6'2" and a half and can get after the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're talking about not only another top 300 player, but a top 150 regardless. 24/7 has him as the 133rd ranked player in the rankings, which would give Auburn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players. That would be, James Pace would be the sixth top 300 player for the Auburn Tigers, again, in the month of June. And so that's where the excitement continues to build. And we talk about it in a positive, yes, but for the Auburn perspective, it's been a little bit almost like a backhanded compliment of, okay, well, you control your own destiny. If you would have won the games that you needed to earlier, it wouldn't have mattered. But all things considered, how else would you want it? If you win these games, you control your own destiny to what you want to do. That's kind of where Alex Golish and this team is at for 2026. Based off of what they want to do in the 2027 recruiting class, you control your own destiny with what you put on the field.
100%. And I think that with what this team can be on the field and bring in these recruits, it's going to be, instead of the guys that they're getting just outright commitments, expect to see that more in the flips of guys that might be committed to an Alabama or to an LSU or to a Georgia that are looking at Auburn but just aren't sold on what the on-the-field product has been compared to those other three universities. I know that you say that with LSU and you say, well, they just fired their head coach too. It's LSU, and it's a Lane Kiffin-led LSU. I think that gets him a little bit of a pass because Kiffin is a known quantity in the SEC. But expect those guys that then, oh, Auburn's able to win some football games too? Maybe this is the place, and you'll see some flips in some top-level targets that Auburn wants to get, and while also keeping their own guys from having the same fate.
Looking around the SEC before we take our final break, Texas A&M at the top, what they've done with their recruiting class, prioritizing that. Would love to know the dollars that have been spent in Aggieland with that Texas oil. But 23 commits. Right now they have 2 5-stars. They have 13 4-stars as well. Oklahoma at the number 3 class in the country, number 2 in the SEC. Texas right there at 6th. Florida right there at 7th, Georgia at 12th, and then Auburn right there at 14th. And just from, gosh, the football perspective, how nice is it to look at it and see Auburn's logo in the same recruiting page and the same recruiting numbers as USC, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas Tech, Texas, Oregon, like, the Auburn logo is right back up there, which, again, continues to show our applause. And then, again, right in front of Wisconsin, Nebraska, LSU, Georgia Tech, Michigan. Auburn's in a very, very good spot when it comes to what they are hoping to bring to the Plains in 2027.
Yeah, I definitely would second that sentiment. It's nice, instead of looking at the Kansas States and the West Virginias and the Indy or Minnesotas of the world, where, or Louisville's, where, man, we'll be lucky just to get in the top 25. We'd just be lucky to land one blue chip recruit that can come, and maybe they stay, maybe they transfer after 2 years. It's nice to know that Auburn consistently is getting the talent needed. There's no excuse of the fridge isn't stocked anymore, because not only was Hugh Freeze able to stock it, and I know a lot left, Alex Golish is going to continue that trend of Auburn is a player and a factor in the recruiting race in 2027 and beyond.
We'll continue to keep you updated with Auburn commitments. You will, oh gosh, is James Pace, is it 5 o'clock Central that I believe I saw?
Potentially. Yeah.
I believe that is when I saw, oh no, between 7:30 and 9 Eastern time. It was Kinyere Crum that committed right after our show. I was hoping that maybe the drive would be able to drop that information. But Again, between Auburn, Tennessee, and Colorado, and Auburn loves where they're at, according to a lot of the experts. But we'll keep you updated on that side of things. We'll take our final break here on the Free For All Friday edition of On The Line. Maybe take a look at the U.S. Open, the World Cup, as well as what's going on in Omaha this weekend. Make our final picks and projections on that side of things, the ACC versus the SEC. We'll come back and wrap up the show with a conversation.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
What a perfect spot right before the break. Well done, Mr. Tripp, on making sure that it was our ad talking about if you missed any of today's show, because you can always go back and check it out
yes.
at the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. We appreciate everybody for being here with us, concluding week two here on the newly revamped
yeah.
On The Line. And so, again, still really, really excited. A lot to come in the future that we are beginning to work towards that we'll be able to hopefully have for you weekly once the college football season gets here. A lot of excitement that we don't want to share too much yet, but
no.
Definitely a whole lot of excitement as we near the home stretch and come with SEC Media Days and then Auburn football getting here. A whole lot of excitement on that side of
things. Oh, yeah. It's going to be incredible, and you'll just have to stay tuned to figure out what it is. And again, it's been a good second week for sure. And you know, week three is going to be even better. I'm really excited. You got any good plans this weekend? I know you asked mine earlier. I don't think I asked you yours.
I don't believe so. Working a couple of days, watching baseball a couple of days.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good weekend to me.
That's a great, I mean, that is just how you can have a weekend. And it's, you know, again, this is the first time that and this week I'm getting to walk out of work and not have to run through the rain. It is beautifully sunny outside. Just make sure you get your chicken fried rice bowl that you left on top of your car.
I did leave that on top of the car.
You would have totally forgotten.
No, I remember I walked out and I put it up there on purpose because I did not want to bring it in here because it would have not been the most pleasant of smell after a couple of hours. And so, no, it was on purpose. And if
right.
I,
no,
if I choose
did.
To forget that as it hits my head on the way by, then that's just completely on me.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I didn't want you to forget as you drove off and have a metal spoon go through your windshield. That would be really, really unfortunate.
Especially driving the lady's car this afternoon. That would have been
yeah.
Would have made the conversation and made things just a whole lot better here. This
Speaking
afternoon.
Of driving, the U.S. Open, Jackson Koivin having a day today. He is top 25 right now and. We were talking about potential tee times. Talk to me about who you'd see him tee off with that you just told
me.
Oh,
that was a question. Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought that was a setup. Yeah, Jackson Koivin right now, one over par. He is one under on the day after finishing shooting a 72 yesterday. He is through seven holes, T25, and he is even right now with Scottie Scheffler and Harry English. And so that
Imagine.
Would be a whole lot of fun if you were able to watch Jackson Koivin and Scottie Scheffler tee off together at the U.S. Open. I mean, you talk about the world number one and who I would be willing to say many people expect to be in a very similar spot in a couple of years of what Jackson Koivin does. But in his final amateur tournament, to be able to tee off with Scottie Scheffler and, again, be as of right now, funny enough, you're only four shots away from being solo second. You are eight shots back of being the solo leader. Wyndham Clark has destroyed the tournament so far. He was shot one under today, but shot a 64, a six under 64 yesterday. And so he is four shots clear of Xander Schauffele, who started hot yesterday, ended up shooting one over yesterday, but shot four under today. And so maybe the dry weather, the lack of wind will make it to where it's a little bit easier conditions. I know that they're wanting to do a whole lot to the greens this weekend, which I know is very difficult to have to not only adjust for the groundskeeper, but also for the players as well. And so a lot of excitement on that side of things. The United States up 2-0, 2-0, I should say, on Australia
yes.
with just a couple of minutes to play. You talk about just playing keep away right now. That is where Auburn wants to be. It's a very
Auburn
physical
wants to be.
Yeah, it's where the United States wants to be. A very, very physical game. It has been for all 87-plus minutes. There's been quite a few tangle-ups. There's been quite a few yellow cards given out. And, again, the emotions of the Australians are starting to get the better of them. The United States trying to walk off and not create any more drama. Just based on the final, again, 3 minutes of regular time and then however much they add with bonus time. But just playing keep away right now. But while we do have just a moment, this weekend in Omaha, Nebraska, the College World Series finals, the fifth ranked seed, the fifth overall seed, North Carolina, and unranked Oklahoma, who has played just about everybody that they have needed to play to move on, they've beaten everybody that they've needed to beat and have played the top talent to get into this spot. I don't know if there's a hotter team in college baseball right now. Neither one of these teams have has felt the feeling of a loss so far in Omaha, and a loss in quite some time. Your thoughts on the game? Game one Saturday at 7 p.m. Game two would be Sunday afternoon, and then the game, if necessary, game three would be Monday night.
I think that it's going to be really interesting to see with the Sooners. Their bats have been so hot. They're going to be running into some dominant UNC pitching. If Oklahoma gets into a game three, I think it's Oklahoma for sure, and that's what I'm going to predict. I think that they lose game one. North Carolina continues to front run, and then in game two and game three, Oklahoma catches up to those dominant pitchers, and the Sooners continue the SEC's streak of national championships and gets one across and wins it.
25 of Oklahoma's 90 home runs have come in the last 10 games for Oklahoma. When you are looking at what North Carolina puts on the mound, I think there is definitely an advantage on that side of things. Oklahoma, again, ran through Georgia with a couple of freshmen, and so I don't know that they will be as poised to face a team like North Carolina, who doesn't rely on the home run ball as much, and their offense is still quietly very, very solid. I'm going to take North Carolina to get the job done in two games.
Wow, so you're thinking they're getting swept.
I do not think that we will be talking about a game on Monday. I think we will be recapping a series on Monday.
I understand. I just think that North Carolina is maybe the third best team Oklahoma's going to play in Omaha alone.
Very good points. Good thing is,
you'll find out.
You'll find out, and we'll be able to watch it. Happy Friday, everybody. Hopefully have a fantastic weekend. For Trip Upton, I'm Christian Griffin. And again, sports are better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We'll be back on Monday to talk about them, whether that's a sweep, whether that's a game three. And we hope that you'll be here to join us.